part of the reason for renewed focus is obviously the ADA decision that came down last year that's brought to light sort of the access conditions for the city. Alderman Zariga and Alderman Moranti have been working pretty strongly on bringing this to light, making this an issue for the city, you know, an issue and a correct one. So we have that to discuss tonight. Continuingly, we're going to talk about our short-term regulation push now that we have the moratorium about to be in place. It gives us a bit of a step back and breathe a little bit, and now focus on making a very good bill. Alderman Wolf, I wasn't able to make the meeting. Alderman Wolf had a meeting with a, and I believe Chairman DiPietro here. President, were you president then? Or no?
Yeah,
it was a host compliance software provider, which is a major issue and major concern with the public and the council about how we would enforce any short-term rental regulations. So she'll give us a briefing on that. And finally, there's the matter of we'll get open discussion within committee about the current proposal by the mayor's office to extend the term of the mayor to 4 years, and have heard the request of the vote of the council. We're going to have a committee discussion about the pros and cons of that. But I'd like to start with sidewalks.
John, forgive me. I do have an additional agenda item. I should have.
That's for new business.
Okay.
So with that said, we're going to start a discussion with current sidewalk legislation that we have here. It's on the city website. Nothing's changed as of now, so if anything develops in the course of the next few meetings, they'll address it. But as it stands, the current bill creates a special district for the entire city of Hudson. It's modeled off of the Bill of Ithaca, New York, that has specific sidewalk districts. Given the size of Hudson geographically, it makes sense just to have one rather than a few based on rewards. It removes the burden on the homeowner for maintenance and upkeep of the sidewalks, and creates a model where there's a shared burden. There'll be residential fees and a separate fee for businesses. The idea is that the wider amortized cost of upkeep through a fee system would reduce the burden of the large bill that comes when you contract out right now to have your sidewalk repaired. It's very expensive. We're dealing with the fact that if someone refuses not to fix their sidewalk, it could go for years without any repair. Certainly there's a mechanism right now where a code enforcement officer could cite a homeowner, we could put a tax lien on them, et cetera, but it doesn't really address anything. There's no timeline there for construction. It doesn't seem to be a priority for the city to do this. In my DPW meeting, it was clear that, in fact, Rob Perry, our superintendent, essentially said that he's not aware of any type of tax lien and that type of action ever happening, well, in his 11 years as being commissioner. So given that Warren Street looks great and is a very strollable sidewalk, if you go over to the north side of the city, you can see that there's some very terrible and dangerous sidewalks along certain areas on the south side too. There's a question of standards. Obviously, you have to respect the historical nature of bluestone or slate construction and make sure that whatever we do, we're not destroying the historical character and fabric in certain neighborhoods, but at the same time, having a reasonable standard that could operate going forward. So with that, pass off to Jeff and discuss a bit since he's coming up to speed with all this.
Well, you can do it. Probably a good idea. I think the draft of the law is certainly a good start in terms of doing some issues. I mean, one of the things I went through, and it's more of just the mechanics of it, is you have the sort of the budget for the district being set by the common council, and I think that's got to go through the PEA and be part of the normal budget process, unless, again, that's something that would be somehow separate under the councils, but I think it needs to be part of the normal.
Right. Well, yeah, I guess that would be something to find, because if there was, we'd have to have there'd be an initial phase of assessment, which would be one, probably a larger budget item, fund, and then going forward, once that was addressed, it would probably reduce in cost, so it wouldn't be.
So, right, but yeah. it's just a year to go through the mechanics.
Hold on a second. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, wouldn't it be better if it was separate from the BEA, being that this is already occurring fee that would...
But just in terms of who has to establish the budget, somebody has to oversee the district.
Right.
Yeah. Are there any other districts in the city?
No. Well, no, exactly. School district.
You don't have any separate lighting districts to your city. It's a whole city.
No,
it's
all
uniform on that. So I'm going to have to look at the question of setting that up with the charter, but I do think it would be akin to your budgeting process. It would just be a separate line going under. You'd still do the same thing. This is sort of apportioning it.
Is
that substantively changing anything you're doing so much as just the process?
But it's a dedicated fee.
Yes, right. So it would be dedicated under. They couldn't take it from and put it under general revenue.
But we would have to label it as to that, so it wouldn't be used in the future
to transfer funds
in that nature.
I think that's what we're trying to
right.
say.
Right, no, it would be a segregated, it would not be part of the city general fund. It's that the assessments could be only used for that.
That's
so in terms of who the entity that controls it.
For the ramp, the money was allocated specifically for the ramp, so it couldn't be touched. So I just want to know, could we do the same for the sidewalks? Okay, that's all I wanted to hear.
Yes.
I think, by definition, too, since it would be the year.
Because it is, and what it would show up is on people's property tax bill as a separate line.
Yes.
You'd have your normal city property tax bill, you'd have another, you have one, of course, at different times for the city school district.
Yes.
But under your annual property tax bill, you would have a line for Hudson Sewer District, Sidewalk District.
Okay.
X amount. And that's based on your, proposed now is on your frontage.
Right. And the business.
So it wouldn't be by assessed value like your other taxes are set by.
Right. Okay.
And does it still have to be separated by a ward?
Now I wouldn't see any reason why it would, because unless you wanted to somehow create like sub accounts.
No, that's the idea. It's a special district, so there'd be one line. You wouldn't have ward one, ward two, ward three, four. There would just be an overall special district line for that sidewalk.
Now I assume also, because I was looking at whether changes we'll have to make into the code on streets and sidewalks. You're not changing the average maintenance requirements for snow removal and ice removal.
No, I don't think so.
You're not going to make that municipal.
No, that's staying. Don't be stayed on the burden.
I don't assume that.
Right, and then I think we had discussions with this with Andrew, but it doesn't necessarily change the liability issue. Then we take on a lot of the sidewalk, because as of now it's a public, it's an easement basically. Like you own the sidewalk, you own the property, but you get it a public, you allow for public use, but you have responsibility.
Well, if there's going to be a requirement, if the city is going to create the district, and that's going to be an interesting question, see what Andy did, but you would take on liability,
right?
And it would trigger the whole there'd have to be notices of defects, notices of claim,
right?
You have to be put on notice on it. I think that's a real question then of how you want to enact this and how quickly essentially you want to assume that liability.
Did you phase that?
I don't know. Or try to look at it or maintain some kind of an obligation, especially if you're trying to figure out how you're going to approach areas of the city. You obviously can't do all the city all at once.
Right, no, there would be a fit. We'd have to do phase one, phase two, phase three, phase
two. So we'd also have to put in until a phase is, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but until a phase is implemented, contracted, and constructed, the individual homeowner still maintains personal responsibility and liability for any defect.
So are you saying, when you talk about the liability, do you mean that
somebody trips on
them. Right, so that would actually transfer to the city?
It will. I believe so, yes. Once you create it, it's the same as the defect in the streets.
Did that happen in Ithaca?
I'm not sure, but I'll have to look. But I assume it must have because you're changing the.
Would it transfer for the whole city too? Or would it be like just for a sidewalk that had been replaced by the city?
Well, I think it's just for once the city has replaced the sidewalk or determined that a stretch was adequate, it didn't need to be replaced. Because presumably, you know, you sort of do an assessment and say, okay, it meets our standards. It's fine, you take it. I would think from that point on, for that section, it would be a city liability. So it would be essentially a creeping and increasing liability as time went on until they were all fully assessed and upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
And until that was done, you'd have some transition period. But I think, so you don't know if Andy looked at that.
I think most of you have to get some notes, but I assume that, I mean, you have to assume the liability at that point, that we're paying. Well, taking the funds, contracting out to have the maintenance.
Yeah, you're taking responsibility.
So we're taking responsibility.
Would you be half and half responsible?
Yeah, maybe there's a hybrid. Well,
and the ownership, though, is the ownership on all the lots goes out to the street, right?
Yes. So the homeowner retains ownership of the sidewalk. It's just sharing that burden of repair. But then, since it's like, I don't know.
And it's a loophole in the law when I was talking over with Andy, because it seemed like the property owner and the city own part of the sidewalk. So who's to determine who is the full owner?
Andy thought part of the sidewalk is actually what I give the city right of way, or is that in the city?
Like, the property that is like on close next to the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Right? And here's the sidewalk, and you have the street and everything. So he was saying pretty much like it's a split. Who's to determine what half of that sidewalk is fully for the property owner? And who's to determine, for example, if someone was to trip crossing the street or up on the curved corner, who's responsible for that? The city or the property owner?
But what's happening now?
I think I'm not sure.
We're in the middle of this question because.
No, but I mean, it's
just being
no pending or recently.
There is no specific definition really still right now who is going to be responsible.
I have.
Going
people,
forward.
Yes, I have people that fell that didn't know who to go after, and they just took it on themselves and, you know, recovered. But they didn't know if they was to go after the property owner, the city, or both.
That's what,
so who's
that's
to determine?
That's what personal injury lawyers live on.
Yeah.
To figure that. I mean, I'm not being light. I'm just curious. I mean, we can't assume that there isn't.
I mean,
there hasn't been litigation in the past against the city or a landowner.
Same with the bone.
Does anybody?
Yeah.
I had my property surveyed, and it does not go to the curb.
Neither does mine.
It's probably.
But does it go half? Does it go like halfway?
It's about 4 feet in.
The lot line.
That's why I have some issues with having setbacks.
Right. Is it a quarter of the sidewalk?
It's not much more than, it doesn't go too much beyond the front of my house.
See, that's my whole point.
It seems like a half and half.
If it's, who's actually the owner? That was the issue that I had with Andy, with trying to determine who is the actual owner of the sidewalk. Is it both? Is it one or the other?
And would this affect everything about the sidewalk, including snow removal?
No.
Well, that's what we're just saying, is no, but now this, you would leave it so that snow removal and removal of obstructions, normal things, cleaning would be on the property owner. It's just sort of a capital repair. It's a
big cost.
Yeah.
Well, this is interesting to know, yeah, if there's no uniformity in terms of who owns what. I mean, some gradual winding of city streets historically.
And is it assessed the same way throughout the entire city? Is it just certain areas of the city?
Well, we have both Peter and Matt. What'd you discover? In your survey, how much of your lot line was into the sidewalk or?
I didn't really literally measure it, but it's somewhere around 4 feet in from the curb.
considerable.
Yeah. Rob must have some of this information.
The sidewalk. And that
it does go in the sidewalk area, but it's not all the way to the curb.
I mean, Rob seems to.
Rob knows the boundary of what the city owns and the city street.
I'm sure he does, whether he'll. Yeah, whether he, well, you know, who knows under how he shared the information or under what rubric, but the.
Right. Like the code enforcement office would have that information too, right? Because they would be the ones in charge of.
No, but would it be, I think, the DPW presumably would know what the how much they're liable to maintain, or not maintain, mm-hmm. and send out a favor to do the road.
I believe both departments got some information about the sidewalk, DPW and code enforcement.
Well, they do. DPW doesn't issue the permits for sidewalk, like any construction on sidewalk, so you have to go to their office to get a permit. You don't go to put up scaffolding, I don't think you go to the code enforcement office, but I think you have to go to DPW.
Do you think most insurance agencies would insure, they wouldn't insure your sidewalk? So somebody falls on your sidewalk.
I don't know.
Unlikely that it's going to be in your.
Oh, your comprehensive liability.
Which I've never thought about.
Homeowners will cover it.
Yeah, exactly. Depends on your policy, but they should.
Because a man in Rhinebeck last year was sued.
Any urban, I mean, I don't have it because I don't live out in the country, but I would think any urban homeowners policy or business CGL policy.
I know that New York City used to handle the liability cases for tripping on sidewalks, and then they just stopped. But then I think in the 90s, they tried to change that arrangement because they were getting whacked with lawsuits.
Sure.
But back to the
Jeff, according to you, and what you're hearing and what you already read or saw, what do you think this committee's first step should be? As far as
asking me these
scope.
Questions and waiting to try and figure this out. I mean, these are all very good questions. I think I need to talk to Rob. I need to get an understanding more of the legal extent of what does the city.
We did bring this up.
And how that works now. I would like to know the history. I mean, there have got to be cases within the last 5 years of somebody falling and suing somebody.
Do you know?
There's one right over here, but I don't know the details.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we can find something, unless somehow you manage to find the least litigious city in the state where nobody sues on everyone.
But as far as you see in the current draft, there's no, aside from this other large issue, there's no other.
Well, no, I thought the general concept of where it was laid out worked pretty well. I'll go through it some more. I think the mechanics of setting up a district citywide, I would just look at general city law on that, and creating the budgeting process for it. It's just driving it with the charter, which isn't a big deal.
Right.
What's the deadline? ADA, like you mentioned, there's some kind of.
I think they're currently Michael Jimenez, I think, is the point person on this, but it seems that that there is some. Push from the federal government that we have a plan, and I've been in communication with Michael and told him that this is part of our arsenal of addressing the ADA complaint is to have something enacted by the council, this year. So certainly, my goal that if we get past this in this spring or early summer, at the latest, that would be great.
The reason why I'm asking you that, Jeff, what do we do now, is because this has been a recurring question that I have been asking since we brought up the subject matter, which is very important. And as we try to hack out the details and how to move forward with the entire city under this plan, in the meantime, we still have people in the city that have dangers, so to speak, even accessing on the sidewalk. I was in a wheelchair, so I got to experience what some of my constituents have been experiencing, and been expressing and complaining about, and we even took videos of it, showing how difficult it is, particularly these residents come out of Providence Hall, which is on 2nd State, and when they come out of that building just to go up the hill, the sidewalks are extremely dangerous. So they're literally either having someone push them up the hill on in the street in their wheelchair, or they have a motorized one, and they're going on the street. Now, as soon as they get up the street going up to Warren, it's difficult to even get up on the curved corner because it's so damaged. So now I have constituents, senior citizens, that are riding in their motorized wheelchairs in the street, and they're afraid, but they have no other choice. How do they get to go to the stores? How do they get to go to the pharmacy? And they have to endure all these things, sidewalk repairs, as they leave their home. So I've been asking, as we're trying to figure out how to fix up the city sidewalk, so to speak, what can we do now, particularly for our senior citizen residents? Because I'm sure this is happening throughout the city. I know this particularly because it's in my ward. So I'm asking again, what can we do now?
Well, I think the DPW meeting was enlightening. I mean, if it's the senior home, is that part of the HHA? Or?
No, it's not. It's not a part of HHA. But I spoke of them particularly because those are the residents that we did the videos with.
Mm-hmm.
But we have people in Bliss Towers throughout the Second Ward who have disabilities, are unable to come out of their homes, or just refuse to even take that chance of going up the hill because they're afraid of getting hit by a car. And they have every right to feel that way.
Okay,
so are we, pardon my ignorance, Stephen, are you talking about sort of privately owned sidewalks that are next to their houses going up that are in bad shape, or are we talking about curbs and stuff?
I'm talking about the curb. We already know the sidewalks are damaged. We already know that, and that's throughout the city. Maybe some areas not, but throughout the city,
right,
for the most part, are. But particularly the curb corners.
Okay, so curbs are the corners.
They cannot get up on with the wheelchair,
right,
or even just you push them up.
I think the answer to that is, I'm not to step on other people's toes on that, but it was part of with DPW and putting it as a budget and telling them to prioritize fixing those curbs and identify them. And I think if you put those in, and again, I don't want to step on the ADA thing, but it would show compliance with the ADA intent. I mean, so it's budgeting and priority.
This came up in the DPW meeting, and currently the superintendent seems to think that they have a very limited type of involvement with meeting that type of compliance. I disagree. And I think if there's a question of a survey as to what the city owns, if the city truly owns the curbs, then we identify that. And
yeah, I think there's probably any question.
Yeah, well,
the curbs are owned by the city.
I think
the city has them as a response.
So I think to Tiffany's point, we could within the charter, if the DPW commissioner has the authority to identify and act on the, and then direct that the superintendent acts on those things. That might be a place of investigation, so that would be another point I'd like to have clarified, Jeff. It seems that when I look at the charter right now, that the commissioner actually has the power to identify these things and then direct the superintendent to act, to make them happen. How we pay for them is another question. So if we do set up this law and we end up budgeting a revenue-based bond that could then be serviced by the fees once we have the mechanism in place. And
right.
That's
what people do.
Depending
on what your current situation is, it would be some of the risk when you do a bond anticipation
of the fee to cover rather than taking out the general fund.
Yeah, right. You start paying for that, and that would then pay back once you start incurring the fees. I mean, obviously, it depends on the extent of how much work.
See, that's when we started to determine, and this was on the last committee, to for us to take pictures of our areas without showing the property owner, without showing the business owner, but just particularly just showing the damage of the sidewalks and curb corners. Do you suggest that we start off with that and sending that to DPW with the curved corners that are damaged?
This commissioner thing, I think, is actually the good point.
Should we send this all to him as far as the curb corners while we figure out the sidewalks?
All of these are good ideas. I don't know the answer. Let me look at the law. Off the top of my head, what you do as a private citizen, or you start sending the letters, you complain to him, you say you fix this stuff. As a member, as an alder person on this, we gather the information through these committees, and John's articulated. I've got to look at those sections and figure out who triggers it, and you pass resolutions or something, a mandate, or we just start talking to the mayor. You make that point known. I mean, obviously, it's an important issue. It's the subject of a lawsuit and the settlement. Obviously, the city's got limited funds, but you have some funds, and it's a matter of putting some priority and identifying. And I guess what I would say to you is identify the critical curbs. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, just go through and do your ranking. These are the top 10. These are the top 10 in terms of, that to most people it provides, an obstacle to on their way to going to their most likely things. There are others that, maybe in very bad shape, but are low priority because they're not in an area where people use it too often.
Yes.
What did you say about that it would be, if these repairs started to get underway, it would be something ADA compliance?
Well, it would help show if the concern was how are you complying with the consent order, mm-hmm. right? And you're doing this longer term plan to create, to repair all the sidewalks in the city, but you start fixing, the biggest problems right now.
Mm-hmm. I want to stick it with Peter again.
So, if I can, I actually have three questions.
Go ahead.
The first, and maybe Tom can help, is will the DRI, the Complete Streets, be able to address any of these issues, at least in the Bridge District, which I think overlaps with a lot of Tiffany's concerns?
Well, we talked about that DPW previously.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was these days, sort of create a metric to move forward.
Okay.
That's the same.
And then I just wanted to confirm, I think you said this at an earlier meeting, but this would be an assessment on people's tax bills, but not-for-profits that don't pay taxes would also be part of this assessment?
Yes.
Like county buildings and the hospital and the churches?
Because it's a fee, it's not a tax, so that's how it's a novel.
That's why they're not taxing. You're not taxing.
So every property owner just...
Every property. So that's how you amortize the cost, but everybody chips in, so... In theory, it should work to make it more equitable and cheaper way to address the problem.
Third question, and I've also brought this up before, but I think this is a wonderful thing. I think that it's like a philosophical switch for the city to embrace the entire street as the public realm from one building wall to another, which is, I think, the way it should be done. But that includes the trees.
Mm.
And we've had this situation in the past where property owners were responsible for their sidewalks and for their liabilities. We've also had this situation that you're responsible for a tree, and technically if a dead tree branch falls and kills somebody in front of my house, I'm liable for that.
Mm.
And I think that if the law should be comprehensive, and it should include street trees as part of the public realm, as well as the sidewalk.
Okay.
That's again a similar question for DPW. Who takes responsibility for trimming trees that are in the sidewalk?
I mean, it's
now they say that it's completely the responsibility of
the homeowner
on the adjacent property.
They have in the past only trimmed trees if they consider them to interfere with the buses or the street sweeper or anything that needs to come through. But aside from that, the homeowner is responsible for pruning trees, except if National Grid comes through and prunes your tree ruthlessly.
And also responsible if a tree dies, you would be responsible to replace it.
Well, I guess that maybe should be included in the bill if we're talking about sidewalks, then that would be, planting would be included in that scope, I would think.
Do we need a motion to add that, or we could just add
connected to that, as part of any future plan for the city to improve sidewalks, to evaluate where tree wells would be good to add as they go, instead of just, you know, adding
right,
more impermeable surface.
The tree survey that was done, and, Tom, can you talk to that? Is there any, do we have any idea?
So that's what happened?
No, CAC is, that's all they're thinking about this entire year.
We should have Doug Kellen, but he was,
yes.
We have an idea, we could identify, and then make, and then make sure that people are communicating on that form.
There was a, you know, a great new sidewalk put in on Union Street in a place that would have been perfect to add a tree on.
Right.
But it didn't happen.
Well, I think what we're also encountering, and I have this clear in my last committee meeting, is there's a lot of, there's a lot of reluctance within city government to even think about addressing these things.
I understand.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're definitely going to push forward with
aim
this.
Aim high.
Yeah, no, we're definitely going to push forward with this because it really does, like you said, change the way that we think philosophically about our public spaces here.
Yes.
It's a very good way, and I think it's a, you can, people will, across the board can sort of agree that that sharing the cost of doing this stuff is a lot better than laying it on, you know, the individual.
Jeff, it has been brought to us, the legal committee, several times about with the discussion of sidewalks, with what the legal committee should take a look at as far as the different types of materials that are used for sidewalks. I believe now in the charter it just says concrete,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And we have people, property owners that do maintain their sidewalks, and they had concerns because they did not use that particularly concrete material. And there's different types of material throughout the city used as sidewalks. You guys can probably help me name the materials, but
the
I know
slate, the papers.
Yeah, that's what we were saying in the beginning of the discussion.
Papers,
oh,
there's brick, there's bluestone,
dirt.
Dirt, exactly.
Yeah.
So
that'd be part of the things, and I think that would be
so
more.
So my question to you would be, do we as a legal committee now, being that we're continuing to discuss sidewalks and hoping to get a resolution out of it, what do we do now to change what we have with the materials of sidewalks? Because if code enforcement wanted to do something right now, all these property owners that did maintain the sidewalk without using concrete would be cited, ticketed,
right.
Whatever.
Can
we change that now?
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's something to consider in the whole context of this,
right.
Because I think, and first of all, I would generally always say, don't be too specific in the law if you can avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
On something like construction standards or construction materials, because things change. But you are an MS4 community for stormwater. You have to look at reducing your permeability and stormwater runoff.
Mm-hmm.
You would certainly see, and I prefer, of course, the technical people on it, but it would seem to me if we're going to be writing in some standards that if you're going to go ahead with the, in, you know, the sidewalk district and you're going to be rebuilding these sidewalks, build in the standards that they should look at permeable materials.
Yes.
You know, materials that provide the necessary safety for sidewalk purposes, but are, you know, less permeable or, you know,
I think some of the framework
beneficiary with the, you know, the state stormwater guidance.
Certainly. Some of the framework in the previous discussions was talked about earlier tonight, as well, is that, you know, we'll have to have some language that speaks to, you know, certainly the historic district, and then if, and then
district-wise.
Yes. And then if, it says if on a certain street, if it's a preponderance, if it's 70% of the sidewalks are made out of this material, then that becomes the governing standard. And then also, as Peter, we were just discussing using the complete streets in the Bridge District as a model as well, because they're going to be establishing a whole slew of wayfaring and street types of architecture that we could, and they'll be doing a lot of work through that. That's already paid for via the DRI, so we could use that as a leg up going forward for areas that don't have particular
so
historic standards.
The answer is yes, this law, or we should look at that at the same time.
Okay.
Yes, there's another legal issue that I haven't heard mentioned. Landmark districts, are the sidewalks are landmarked. and they would need to be consulted about changes. Another issue as far as landmarks goes, for example, on the corner of Third Street and Union, along the side of the building there, it's a 200-year-old brick site. Now, to me, it's obvious that should not be touched. It's not cement, you know, but it is landmarked and it is of historic interest. There are very few 200-year-old sidewalks anywhere in this, not in this city.
Yeah, I just think you have to weigh the argument about how much, you know, if it's incredibly inaccessible, you can't just turn it into the same piece if it's a public way, so you have to figure out if there's a way to restore the sidewalk to the historical condition.
I think that restoring it would be the end of it. It is really quite something if you go look at it.
Mm.
And there may be a way to make a little rise to get people out.
Maybe that's it. Maybe there has to be something.
But I think they should be, you know, it's something that should be protected as it is.
Well, I think we'll have to abide by that anyways. If things are, how things are landmarked is going to affect how the law operates in those landmark areas. But
I'm pointing this one out because it may not fit all the requirements, but it fits a very important requirement,
right,
to save our history.
Sure. Well, keep in mind that.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Sure. I would just like to note that in Hudson, I think we all know that the sidewalks are like a patchwork. There are very few streets where it's all one thing. You might have blue stone, and then you might have crumbling cement, and then you might have some pavers from 1975 where you can fall, and it just goes on and on like that. So I think that we have to be mindful of looking at what we do have, what's unique about our town, what we can repair and make current, but also be, as you had mentioned earlier, be aware of the historic fabric of the community. It's so important. That's why so many of us are here to begin with, and what brings the tourists and the money.
Well, I think the law will balance that, but as to Peter's point, it's nice to have a new philosophical orientation here about how we engage the public, civic responsibility. Anyone else on this issue?
So just to go back to that question of the next steps, right? Like what do we now have to do?
Jeff's fault taking his notes, and I guess he's here to consult with you.
Take half this list and give us a new
resource.
I think I'm going to have to just, you know, investigate some of these things and find some stuff out. Some of it's going to be talking, obviously, to Rob, maybe Craig.
I mean, you feel like also,
I think the commissioner, too.
Yeah, the commissioner.
Also, the city could approach Rob with some kind of mandate of prioritizing some of the, like, really...
Well, I think that's the question.
The current quotas right now.
Well, I think it's the question. I think the interesting thing is...
Well, they, right, those things can go in parallel.
Right.
They don't have to...
Right, that's
doesn't have to wait for the offer. Yeah, so I would say, certainly for those things, from your perspective, start creating that list.
Okay.
And prioritizing and starting, you know, you don't need me to have those discussions with Rob or the commissioner.
No. Well, I think it's
just help.
Right, and he can draw you in.
Right, if there's an issue around something, but talk to the mayor. I mean, I don't know where there'd be any point of disagreement.
Should
other than
the
basic
ADA
five
coordinator involved in this discussion?
He's like, well, I mean, Michael reached out to me essentially just to, well, he just wanted to make sure that we're on it in terms of that this is top agenda item, and then we should bring him in for
it. We've been on it.
I know, but you know, we started, you know, he just wants to make sure it's going. So I'm saying he's active and would mind it be involved in his defense here.
Yeah, I would start looking at those things and just identifying where there's room in the budget for it. What can be done.
Which is tight,
but
we'll find
out.
But we have to do it.
Well, it's very important. It's not like we're ordering just flowers for the yard.
Those are important things.
Yes,
but
in the spring.
Okay. So I just want to move on to a brief discussion about STR regulation. As I said earlier, now that we have the moratorium on passed by the council. We're gonna continue working on this bill and make it right. I've given a bit of information about current properties from the assessor's office that fall under the lodging tax. Jeff has that. And as I said earlier, Rebecca and Tom and Heather, our treasurer, had a phone conference with a close compliant software company, which would, for a fee, a yearly fee, which I assume we would use the lodging tax to help pay for, so would work with software to help us track online how people are advertising their properties that fit within the framework of whatever bill we pass. So, Rebecca, you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I could just describe a little bit about this. And also, I have a 55-page document that they followed up with that basically encapsulates the whole meeting. And like, it was a PowerPoint presentation, so I can share that with you all. And so, I mean, this company has been spoken to by Hudson a couple of times, and also by the county, and they are like a top, they're very much at the forefront of dealing with cities' needs for this as it continues to grow and roll on. They seem to be very like responsive to all the different aspects of the challenges of it, and so they've developed extremely thorough processes where they do everything from, let's see, the services are the services include mobile enabled registration and tax collection, address identification, compliance monitoring, rental activity monitoring, and tax calculation support, and a dedicated hotline for basically people to, you know, dial up with their complaints. But it's all completely tied to actual listings. So they comb the listings of all the short-term rental sites. There's like 88 sites that they monitor, and they cross-reference that with our actual data of who is registered and what the actual sales are of those registered places or not registered places. Then they also follow through with enforcement. So they provide a service where they basically they can create letters that go out to people who are in default or who are not complying. And there's a whole system of like how they keep track of who needs what letter, stuff like that. And so it really does, I mean, so pretty much they report a very high success rate with basically getting people to comply. And so they also report that this is a revenue positive situation for most municipalities, and they're actually being used by a lot of upstate cities, not a lot maybe, but here 11 local jurisdictions in New York State currently are using this company, including Ulster County, Dutchess County, Lake George, Seneca County, Sullivan County. It looks like it would be around $20,000 for the services if we went with all the modules that they offer, which and some of them are the core of the service, and we would have to use, you know, I mean, some of the modules are required and some of them are less so.
It's an a la carte.
Yeah, basically.
What's the name of the company for the
Host Compliance? It's called Host Compliance. And yeah, they're very professional.
Where does the $20,000 come from?
Well,
I mean, yeah, presumably we could use We'll have the general revenue from the lodging tax that will be part of the general fund, so we could conceivably justify the cost by saying the software, if it's revenue positive, as they're saying.
That's what they're saying.
Because, you know, if it falls upon the code enforcement office, then it's extra cost to hire people to monitor and set up a system that replaces that. So we could justify the cost by saying that we reduce the burden. If we had to actually hire someone else to do it, it would probably cost the city more. So
some of the modules go down over time.
And we don't have to do the full packet. But if we did the full packet and it does take away the burden on the code enforcement officer, then we save money.
The key was that previously Health Compliance didn't have as much to offer as they do now. Heather has sat through a number of these and was impressed with what they've developed since she last talked to them. But of course, we'd have to listen to another one or two before we could select them.
We'd have to add another. So it's just at first, it was sort of the first glance to see what's out there.
And they were able to provide.
Not yet, but it was just a sort of trying to sense what is out there and what are people are using.
And the $20,000 covers for that entire host compliance program, right? Mm-hmm.
The $20,000 would be like the absolute, most deluxe version of what they offer.
Who only has access to this program? Is it only code enforcement? Is it the public? Is it just?
No, it's the city. Although that's a good question. Which part of the city will be able to or would be able to? Because it's a 24-hour, their website is the interface, and we would be able to check in on that all the time. But yeah, it's not like public information.
The one.
Well, I guess. That's a great question. I think
probably the treasurer.
The treasurer or the code enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it really does take the load off of the code enforcement question, because it basically does all of the work of determining, it doesn't, it means that there's no case in which, like, Craig would have to be like scouring the city to figure out,
Or someone in his office can take some questions and call.
Is this purely for policing compliance? And is this just during this moratorium, or this is
No. The idea would be because a lot of the question that's come from some of the criticism from the public and warranted, but I also think you can make the same complaint about most civil statutes, is how do you, what's the burden of enforcement? How do you enforce the law? And you hear this a lot as a criticism from people saying, like, it's an unenforceable thing. Well, a lot of civil statutes require voluntary participation from the public and your sense of civicness to participate in what's legal and what's illegal. And in this sense, this is a tool to help the city enforce a statute where people say, oh, you'll never be able to police it. Well,
it's a real invasion of privacy, and I'd like to know what happens when you're registered. You have
Hold on.
I just want an answer to this.
I'll answer it. People are already participating in putting their properties on Airbnb, are already sort of assenting to a type of they're giving up their privacy in a manner to then say, if they're going to complain about a statute, say that the mechanism onto which we enforce it is a violation of their privacy. It seems to be a specious argument. I would say, certainly, however, how the city, if we did engage in this, in buying a software of this type, we'd have to go through our RFP process. If we're engaging it, there would be privacy protections. It's not like everybody can have access to the information.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you're advertising your home on Airbnb, you're essentially inviting people into
your... But what happens if you're not? What happens if you just do, short-term rent, you do a rental to someone for 2 months?
That's different, and that's allowed. So if you're going to go out there and but if you're... If you're
so
using,
is this only for Airbnb?
It's only for Airbnb. It's only for people who are using.
So short-term rental is the term that applies to any short-term rental, which means under 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So so that is what this when I was describing that it scours all the different sites, that is about the fact that there are many different sites that sell short-term rentals in people's homes or in non-owner-occupied short-term rentals, which is actually the target of the legislation and of what most cities are attempting to control.
Certainly, if you're letting...
If you're owner-occupied, it sounds to me like you all of a sudden are forced now to be part of another thing on the internet.
Well, no, not necessarily.
I think that if you are listing your home on a short-term rental site, you are opening yourself up.
No, you're not on a site. I'm saying you have your place registered,
well, then
so you're legal in Hudson.
Yeah, but if you're... But if
rented to somebody who
says,
Nicole,
if you're
in
just,
place for 2 weeks.
Nicole, if you're just operating as a... You're allowed to, under current law, to sublet, if you would fair, or do it a short
term. If you're bothering to register under the short-term lodging tax here now, and that means you want to, even occasionally, not that often, rent it out for short terms to a friend, and if you, because you're happy to go the old-fashioned way, say, okay, I'm not using any of the online booking systems.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that, but I am going to rent out my place every once in a while for a week or two to friends or friends of friends.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. You won't get picked up by this system because you're not going to be on the internet for them, but you're nevertheless, you're registered with the city, you're paying your tax for the people who are here. You're subject to an audit to the extent that you're subject to an audit like anybody else. And this program probably wouldn't even capture you.
Right, because you're a periodic. You would not.
But it would still have my data.
If you
well, you're going to have the data anyway. The data is here in the city because when you're filing your monthly or quarterly reports and paying your taxes, you're saying how many people stayed there. They paid you the tax. And you're passing it. You're passing.
To my city. I'd also just like to point out that the city already uses similar systems for various functions that it, including tax tax collection. I mean, the treasurer's office already uses an external company that does certain calculations and deals with certain aspects of your data. So that's not this is not an unprecedented.
Yeah, and I think to Jeff's point, what you're describing wouldn't be much of an issue. But then again, too, if you're registering, like you said, if you're registering in trying to abide by the law, then suddenly say the mechanisms to which that we're using to enforce the law don't apply to you. It's, you know, it's a problem, or shouldn't apply to you because of this argument, then I don't know. Fortunately, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is just final data. I mean, if you're worried about having your information out of that data, it won't be there because you're not in that. But if somebody's determined to find information about you, it is available here at the city where you find it. That's subject to FOIA.
Right. So
If I know, did you pay your short-term lodging tax, somebody can find that out.
Some other questions?
If the initial fee is $20,000 for the best one, like the Cadillac of these plans, what is the fee the next year, the maintenance fee going forward? How does that work?
Is it always if it's
my
20 years?
Is it's a flat amount.
Every year it's $20,000?
Yeah. Oh. I mean, the city brings in a whole lot more than that on registration.
Over $300,000 more a year. So right now, I mean, currently the money that we're bringing in through the lodging tax is pretty robust. It's proportion, it's a lot. It's a high amount of money, so it would pay for itself.
If there was a 6-7% increase in revenue as a result of this, which I think obviously there would be,
right,
then it would pay for itself.
Yeah, and again, I still think if you had to hire someone extra as a city employee to do the work, or even part time, it would probably be more than $20,000 a year, given the load and what the requirements would be for, et cetera, material hire for the office. So, certainly something like this, and the constellation of options of enforcement seems to be a pretty good option.
Do they have to hire any additional office staff or just, or?
No, in fact, it takes some of the work also away from the treasurer. Some things that the treasurer does currently have to do would actually be done by this.
So if it's done by that and it takes away some burden and some pressures over certain offices, who maintains this? Who makes sure that the information is always coming in correct and on time.
It's a very robust application that's been developed by this extremely well-reviewed and pretty like on their game company that has basically just like. I mean, I liked this company a lot, but definitely we have to look
well,
at other companies.
That's the question.
They seem to have cornered the market to some extent and are apparently very good at what they do.
So we'll just get our code enforcement office. Right now, if we just pass the law on Craig, we didn't get it.
Yeah, so Jeff was just saying that the town of Jewett is on the list of towns that work that use it,
yeah.
And that we could ask them for their experience and find out how they're satisfied. They have, like, I'll also give you this presentation too. They talk about like 98%, you know, customer satisfaction. So,
and where did you get this information?
I just Googled post compliance and saw a list of. You know, because that, I mean, it's funny to me that the company uses the name of the actual activity as their name.
Pretty sad.
But you know, and then I just wrote to them and said, can we have a demo? And that's it.
Goofer. Okay, so this is basically all I wanted to hit with that. Any more comments or questions about this?
Actually, just one.
Yeah, sure.
Given that you guys have, is it five meetings left to come up with some short term legislation, are you guys amenable to possibly scheduling a few additional meetings beyond your monthly meetings? Because you have sidewalks, referendums, chickens, maybe referendums about chickens.
Well, hold on a second, please.
You know, you only have a few months left.
Well, I think
the
sidewalk law in its current form is pretty close to being able to have some action on it, so I don't think we're going to have to spend a massive amount of time on it, but of course it'll take more work. The draft of the STR bill, you know, Jeff is coming up to speed on it, but you know, we're honing in on certain metrics that are going to be in it, requirements for a residency.
Maybe you and I can talk about that, and I can try and have a new draft for next month.
Yeah, so it's not like we're going to delay on it. The work that we did in the last council is still valuable. We'll get the bill off of that, so I don't think we have to add extra meetings. If we do, if we're under the deadline to pass it, then certainly we'll try to do that.
The moratorium technically hasn't begun yet.
Right, but that's another thing. But I don't want, you know, it's not like we're trying to use it to wait. I mean, it's going to help us pass the bill.
We have chickens on the agenda.
No, it's not on the agenda, but if the public wants to talk about it, we'll get there. But I also
hearing about chickens, so it's not the first time.
So as we move along, we're gonna have a final item, and then we'll go to new business for the public and council. Alderman Garriga had a motion that left in the current the formal meeting about the proposal from the mayor's office to extend the term of the mayor to 4 years, and the motion was made to come to committee, and so we're going to open a brief discussion. We don't have to have a long one, but certainly the idea, the pros and cons about it, good to hear from the public how they feel. I've heard some comments certainly about the law in the formal meeting. It also, we voted down a previous law that would have extended the terms for everyone in city government, essentially, and then it came back to us that the mayor's office had seen fit to have a 4-year term. So now we're here to open that discussion.
Well, we've been here for over an hour, so I don't want to stay talk for too long, unless you guys don't mind staying. But I've had discussions with some of my constituents and non-constituents about the subject matter of a city manager. And I would like to do some more research, and I would like this committee to do some more research on the subject matter as far as what responsibilities differ from the city manager and from the mayor. From my understanding and from the conversations that I've had with some members of the public, is that the people want someone that they can depend on, and a lot of people do not agree with a four-year term, not just for the mayor, but for any one of us as council members and so forth. And with respect to the public and their concerns, a city manager came about, and we want to do some research and even bring in some current city managers now from different areas that can explain to us in more detail what their responsibilities are that differs from the mayor. It's not taking away from the mayor, it's actually helping the mayor with his, him or her burdens with their role and their position. And with a city manager, people, from the feedback that I was getting, they were suggesting a city manager should have a four-year term, someone that, don't shake your head, this is, I'm repeating it.
They never have terms.
I'm repeating and I'm talking about what was suggested to me.
That's the opposite of what a manager.
They were saying a city manager should have a four-year term, someone that the people can depend on, that his primary focus is the city, not particularly politically involved.
I don't think that the city manager would be an elected, like a term limit.
It's not. There's an organization that you can all look at that thinks an association of city administrators and city managers, and I'll show you that.
The values of city managers and why it's been done in a lot of places, it sort of professionalizes city management administration, and it gets you a professional manager in there. They're a bureaucrat.
Mm-hmm.
And they run things and do whatever, and they can be under a contract, but oftentimes they usually serve at the, for a term at the discretion of the whoever's appointed, maybe mm-hmm. better than decide to do a wholesale change in the charter.
It's a charter. That's right. If you write it,
you'd be changing your charter to a city manager system. There are different ways of doing it, and you give them the powers that you want them to have, and it reduces, the powers of the mayor to a certain degree or their responsibilities. You would most likely get rid of your commissioner.
Well, that's what another subject matter that came about.
It's more of the superintendents and the people in charge of their respective departments would be kind of redundant as a commissioner on top of
that. That came about is if the mayor would have a four-year term, then why would we need commissioners? That was another subject matter that came about that I feel
because
that...
they're not elected.
I'm sorry, but I'm still
sorry.
And it's just something that I feel that, for number one, just talking about a four-year term so early in the year, I think we have much more work to do than focusing on that. Number two, if we are, I think we need time to do some research and bring in speakers that have that experience so we know what we're actually focusing on and what we want to see in the near future. As far as my opinion, We're just in the month of February, and this, a four-year term should not be the subject matter. We have housing as a subject. We have these short-term rentals. We have sidewalks. There's police issues. There's so many things that our constituents have concerns for that we are still addressing just from last term that we need to complete. So just all of a sudden right now, let's put our work on pause to discuss a four-year term. I don't think that's a good use of our time for right now.
It doesn't really require a lot of time. It's a simple charter revision that would have to go through a long process and would involve a lot of discussion. To talk about a city manager, of course, would be far more complex and a diversion from this charter revision. It's not a really complex thing to put forth at this point.
Well, the point is, in terms of just a process, you just, you pass it. And
right.
It's going to have to be on the ballot in November.
Right.
It's subject to a referendum
and
it has to be done.
I too, have heard many people discussing the possible benefits of a city manager system over a mayor and or over a strong mayor, I believe is the term. And I think that I think it would be important before moving forward with creating a 4-year term for the mayor to define whether that is a strong mayor or not.
We have a strong mayor.
Well, I know we do now. I'm just saying that I don't understand exactly. It seems to me like an obvious juncture at which it should be discussed whether the current, if we're talking about the possibility of a city manager, which
you can do however you want on it. I think they're parallel discussions.
And then,
one doesn't preclude the other. I think one of the justifications or the reasons for extending the term for the mayor,
mm-hmm.
when the charter went into significant revision 10 years ago or less or whatever, you created the strong mayor system. You changed the system to enhance the powers of the mayor. There's a lot that could be said that given the mayor's powers of appointment and everything else, it helps to have a continuity of 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily subject to a change every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously that's trade-offs or whatever, but it gives an opportunity for longer continuity. You have the 2-year terms for the council members, which then makes it it's akin to the House of Representatives, more responsive to the city if there's real concerns, how policies are going with the mayor or whatever. I think the discussions of a manager may be worthwhile having, but that's going to be a very significant and long-term discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And you could still, obviously, decide you want to go forward with a manager.
Mm-hmm.
You could then revisit the question of the term for the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Or you keep the term for the mayor for 4 years and you still have a manager. They're not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
You would determine how you want to do all of those things. I think the point is if there's general support for some movement to make it a 4-year term, I said, just go ahead and do that and continue your discussions and explore these other things.
Now, I want to know, why are we even talking about this now? Because I remember when the mayor presented this during the informal, the very thing he said was, if the committee and council decides to vote this down, that he would not take it personally and he would understand and move forward. So we voted it down. Why are we talking about it?
We didn't vote it down.
We didn't vote it down.
We
didn't
vote it down.
No. And I think it's really important to also understand.
Like I said, I had a seizure last night and my memory is gone.
Well, let's be fair.
This is not so this question didn't just come up, right? It's been the question of a 4-year term. It's been, I remember hearing it discussed.
It just was voted down, though.
Yes, it was voted down.
It just
down.
Lost.
Well, the one, but then,
no,
he,
it,
but then it was voted down, and then it was just presented again with
what
the mayor.
Last year?
Last year.
That was a different law.
Late in the year.
I brought that up. Everyone, order. I brought that up in the opening. We voted down that one bill, and it was re-presented as just the mayor. Yeah, sure.
Just to rehearse the history to the best of my recollection, toward the end of his term, Mayor Rector brought up a proposal to increase the terms from 2 years to 4 years for the citywide elected officials,
mm-hmm.
mayor, treasurer, council president. The council then countered with a proposal to increase the terms for everyone,
yes.
ultimately the county supervisors. That was voted down in
yes.
council, 6-5. Now we have a new proposal just brought forward by the mayor.
Yes.
Okay.
So is that is correct?
That's it. Yes.
Now I would like, if I may, to put in my 2 cents. It's probably well known I don't support lengthening anyone's terms, but what I like less than extending the term of the mayor is the idea of hiring a city manager, who, if I am correct, will have not a term but a contract. I think. Making government less responsive to the voters, who are the government, derives its just powers from the consent of the governed. The voters ultimately give their consent by voting in elections. I think there's too much power currently in the hands of contractors, consultants, and experts.
Mm-hmm.
There are those who don't trust the people, the voters. I'm becoming very skeptical about the experts and the consultants. And anything that reduces responsibility of the government to the voters, to my point of view, is to be avoided. Everything comes down to the details. People may think, well, if we have a city manager, there are things I want done and then they can be gotten here, they can be accomplished. But to everyone, it depends on exactly what those things are, and I think everyone should have maximum say in determining policy and moving in the direction of this kind of managerial government by a consultant. It's the wrong way to go.
I think that that kind of conversation is what I would think we would want to have around this question. So my desire to have this conversation is not because I necessarily think that a city manager is a good idea, and I have actually heard that that there's a lot of downsides in terms of exactly sort of the professionalization or like the business then that it becomes. And so I just
want
to say that's
kind of
what I would like to hear is people.
Well, I want to move this along. We'll carry this over until next month, and then we should look. As Tom said, it's going to really be a basic vote because it's going to be a chart. It's a heavy lift to even change the chart to begin with.
I agree with you, Chair.
So we'll move it along. Quickly, there seems to be some business.
I would like to just make a quick remark.
Well, some people want to discuss chicken, so I just want to get this out there quickly, and then I'll
move on. Well,
I will vote for chicken.
That's really thrown me for a loop.
So who's that? Anyway, what's the chicken argument?
What's the chicken argument, please?
I think that the consideration here should first be the opening remarks of the Constitution, we the people. And we the people should not have our powers reduced.
I agree.
And they should be carried to the highest level they can be so that we are real democracy and that we have a say over our representatives. And the more often, it should not be cut back. We need to, and in the last election, after a two-year period, the people voted by 70% for a change, and they got it. And they had power to do that thing. This power will be taken away. They will be voting half as many times as they would have.
Agreed, and thank you, Matt. We do support the people here, and I believe also if this does go to a charter vote, it's going to be the people who ultimately decide it, and I think...
Well, I think that I can add that people we voted for by 70%.
Agreed, and it's a question if the full council will even vote to support it. So, I would like to move on to chickens a little quickly.
We the chickens. If I may, a statement. So, my name is Adam Weiner. I live in the First Ward, and I'm here to speak about keeping chickens in the city of Hudson. As you may remember, in 2013, the Common Council passed a resolution permitting city residents to keep a limited number of hens in a prescribed way in the privacy of their backyards. Unfortunately, this resolution was vetoed by the mayor. After speaking with my alders, I'm here to encourage us to revisit this issue. The benefits of keeping backyard chickens are many and well documented. They include low-cost access to high-quality, nutritious, and cruelty-free eggs, improved soil health through the use of chicken waste fertilizer, enhanced pest control, reduced food waste, environmental benefits in the reduction of food miles, as the average egg travels 317 miles before it's eaten, a step towards climate resilience by creating more and varied sources of food, and finally, stress relief and companionship for the keepers. Keeping backyard chickens is not without risk, and you will see that the 2013 resolution contained sensible parameters and restrictions to ensure for the health, safety, and quality of life for the chickens, keepers, and neighbors alike. The keen eyes of my alders found opportunity to add further specifications, which is why I bring it here before you for consideration and discussion. A 2015 review found that there are more than 13 million Americans raising backyard chickens and that 93% of U.S. cities allow backyard poultry flocks. I sincerely hope that Hudson joins their ranks. And I have a copy of the 2013 law review if anyone would like to take a look at that.
So,
how many chickens are you looking to have?
The 2013 law allowed for up to 5 hens, cooped at all times. Well, you know, a coop and run, that kind of situation.
Sounds fair. Anyone else? John?
A quick question. Does that resolution also allow for guinea fowl?
This was chicken specific.
Guinea fowl quite loud.
Oh, yeah. Bee ticks.
They eat a lot of ticks.
Do skunks attack chickens?
My name is Brigham Sharp. I'm here representing Kite's Nest. Can you introduce yourself? Okay, I'm here with Devin. And we're part of a collective of young people who are doing environmental and food justice work in the city of Hudson. We visited a whole bunch of chickens. Our friends at Radix in Albany keep chickens in the city, and we also visited some chickens at Wild Seed a couple weeks ago. And so there's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm around having the ability to care for these animals for healing purposes, for therapeutic purposes, also for young people to learn how to be caregivers. We harvested eggs last week and then made omelets out of them. Devin made delicious omelets. So it's really important for young leaders to learn about the food system and not from an industrial perspective, but from a self-reliant food sovereignty perspective. Also, there are lots of environmental perks to it as well. And it reduces the amount of food waste that goes into landfills, which is methane is a huge source of carbon emissions. And so there's so many perks. We would love to continue to be part of this.
Well, I too love visiting chickens and eating them. Eggs are delicious. And I think it's a great thing. And, you know, obviously if the resolution is already, the 2013 resolution is out there, we don't have to do that work. We can just look at it.
Revisit
and, you know, have it at our next committee and then bring it up for general vote following that. So thank you for speaking up for the chickens, everyone.
Did you all pluck the chickens yourselves?
These were just for egg laying purposes,
okay.
Not for killing and eating.
No,
that's
not
what
I think.
Well,
you
would
be eating?
I mean, we talked about slaughtering them,
no.
But
that's
not, but like, that's not part of
this.
As a
full disclosure, I've done that.
I mean, I know that's what you got to do to eat water. I'm just curious if that what you all are doing.
We're not doing anything right now with chickens beyond like going and visiting them, but it would be more of a caretaking, letting and then fertilizer. Yeah. The point is
in
not
the original law, they don't allow it.
Correct.
Well,
within the city.
Within the city.
Only
at the car. So take the green one.
Motion to adjourn.
Charles.
I need a second from the
back.
I know, I already did.
The farm, less than a mile down the street.
What's your dog?
What?
What's your dog?
Oh, yeah, sure can.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.